The following essay was originally aired in 2001. You're listening to The Natural World. I'm John Cooney. Journal entry, December 8th, 9:15 a.m. East bank of the Willamette River, Peoria, Oregon. High, shapeless clouds fashion a closure over the valley, muting the sun's light and reabsorbing its shadows. The two-dimensional ceiling darkens into a purple-gray bruise as it settles over the Cascades. A seam of pink and yellow light etches a shimmering boundary between mountains and sky on the eastern horizon. Mount Jefferson peers above silhouetted crags in the northeast with a surreal luminosity conferred by the sun's direct rays unrestrained at higher elevations. To the west, sparkling white snowfields linger atop the bald summit of Mary's Peak and in the higher saddles of the Coast Range. The flow of the Willamette River is already deep and powerful here in the Mid-Valley, 140 river miles upstream from its convergence with the Columbia. Seasonal rains have filled the channelized river, inundating its willow-covered gravel bars. A house-sized raft of blackberry bramble surges through the silty brown water, sheared from an upstream riverbank. A massive tree trunk, wedged at a 45-degree angle, stubbornly resists the torrent in the middle of the river. It has captured a V-shaped 15-foot snag, whose fulcrum rests improbably atop the larger log. Swift currents cause the heavy snag to slowly row back and forth, sending rooster tails of white foam shooting fiercely into the air. The first wave of settlers arriving in the Willamette Valley gazed upon a flat, wetland savanna sparsely populated with white oaks. They easily plowed through the rich valley soils, transforming the ancient, diverse grassland community into homogeneous fields of golden wheat. In 1851, H.A. McCartney staked a government donation claim of 320 acres on this spot bordering the Willamette River. The open prairie extended to the water's edge, and the riverbank was sufficiently high and bold to resist floodwaters of even abnormal depth. Ranchers who had settled on the broad, oak-scattered prairies to the east customarily drove their loaded harvest wagons over McCartney's land to the Willamette. There, from a bankside landing, they shipped their produce downriver or waited for incoming supplies from the north. In 1857, Arthur and John G. North built the first store on the high ground above the boat landing. The prairie ranchers believed that this location had riverport possibilities. With riverboats then serving as the main commercial and cultural connection with the outside world, the new town of Peoria seemed inevitable. Several of the town's founders had come west with the Peoria Party in 1839. Remembering the Illinois town of their earlier years, they revived the name, hoping to transfer the comfort of home to this new wilderness. By 1875, Peoria contained 4 grain warehouses on the riverbank with a capacity of 60,000 bushels of wheat. Enrollment in the school was 60 students. The wharves were bustling with riverboat traffic, and the village became a shipping point for considerable business. In 1887, the Oregon and California Railroad ended the town's aspirations and sent business several miles eastward to Halsey and Shedd. This morning, the river is quiet. Chickadees and kinglets comb over bare cottonwood branches lining the shore. A treeless landscape of new green grass unfolds eastward for miles without interruption. Several hundred wintering sheep graze peacefully, unconcerned for predators. A half-dozen ravens pick over one of the fallen. Disorganized flocks of Canada geese roll over each other chaotically as they head upstream. A great blue heron stands in petrified vigilance, waiting for a meadow vole to reveal itself among the grassy tunnels. Every few minutes, a car speeds by on Peoria Road, racing over the valley floor at 60 miles per hour. What do Van Gogh, Shakespeare, the Hopi and Koyukon people, Mark Twain, and the rock band Counting Crows have in common? They all draw inspiration from some of our most common and least understood birds, the crow and the raven. This month's presentation of the Eugene Natural History Society is entitled In the Company of Crows and Ravens by Dr. John Marsluf, a professor of wildlife sciences at the University of Washington. In his lecture, Dr. Marsluf investigates fully the inspiration of crows and ravens on people and our effects on these adaptable birds. The meeting is on Friday, December 11th at 7:30 p.m. in Room 100 in Willamette Hall at the U of O campus. If you have sightings or events you would like to report or suggestions of areas you would like to see profiled, you can send me email at John Cooney, that's John with an H, C-O-O-N-E-Y, at msn.com.